Hello, fellow rebel capitalists. I hope you are well. I've got a buddy of mine. I just found him outside. I could not believe that. I was out there getting lunch, getting my coffee, and I was ordering my salad. I look up, and sure enough, it's Chris Martins. What do you know? Actually, this we planned it a little bit more than that. But Chris, welcome to the Rebel Capitalist
Thank you.
Channel,
Thank
buddy.
Thank you, George. It's so good to be here. So good to be here.
Yeah, now I know I've been listening to your content like religiously since January of 2020, because you were the first person to really come, or one of the first people to really point out that this could be a problem. We're talking about, I call it the Cerveza sickness, just to keep it YouTube friendly.
Yes, but exactly.
You know what I'm talking yep. about. And you have had your thumb on the pulse of all the data, all the facts, and the true science mm-hmm. as to what's really going on here. So for that, I want to thank you. I mean, I think you have really, you've saved lives. I mean, that's really the bottom line. And I know now, whenever my family members have an issue with the Cerveza sickness, the first mm-hmm. thing they do is go to your channel and say, okay, well, what's Chris talking about? You know, what should I do? And it's really kind of a source of not just information, but a source of information that we can actually trust. People who are in this space that really don't have a lot of confidence in the central planners, the people that are in charge of these institutions or the politicians. Mm-hmm. So how is it, what has your experience been like since over the last 2 years, and where do you think we are now, and where do you think we're headed with the pandemic going into 2022?
Oh, great questions. You know, the Cerveza sickness taught me a lot. Yeah. One of the things it taught me is that the best information, particularly in a fast moving situation, doesn't come from the center anymore, as if it ever did. But, you know, people were looking to the NIH, the CDC, you know, all these big leaders, and they were months behind. And right. still months behind what we now know to be
even,
best,
yeah,
best
even
in class
the news
data.
That's coming out today.
Yeah.
This is stuff that you were talking about 6 months ago.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we were just, when we were driving, there was a big sign right over the roadway in Arizona that says, join the 4.7 million other Arizonans who've been vaccinated, right? Apparently they're not aware yet that the Omicron variant has no interest in this vaccine, doesn't care about it.
Yeah.
it don't care.
Right. It's the honey badger. It's the extreme exactly. version of the honey badger.
It literally don't care.
Yeah. But you know, it's, we were talking about that road sign, and what was interesting, I did a video on this. Maybe 6 months ago, that road sign across the highway, or those road signs mm-hmm. across the highway, were saying, get the medicine, get vaccinated to eradicate or to end
right.
the Cerveza sickness. That's the terminology that they were using.
To end it.
That's right.
Yeah.
And people like you and Brett Weinstein were coming out and say, well, this is not something that we can end. We can have it. It can be less severe. We can control it. It might not be a pandemic in the future, but you can't end it. No, or at least the tools that we have at our disposal right now, i.e. the vaccines, they will not end this. So right. I pointed that out as just pure propaganda from the government. But now those signs, I noticed, have changed. So again, it's an example of the central planners and the people who have been given authority mm-hmm. by the media and the politicians to be kind of the quote unquote science. Now, all of a sudden, they're coming around and admitting what you were talking about maybe even a year ago, if not 6
right.
months ago.
Right. And that's part of that whole from the outside, not the central story anymore. So from the outside, all you had to do was talk to a virologist. So you're Vandenbosch very early on. Right? This is a guy who developed vaccines, knows all about it, and said, hey, this is a non-sterilizing vaccine, meaning you give it to somebody, it doesn't prevent them from actually getting the disease. Measles right. is a sterilizing vaccine.
Right, right.
Polio is a sterilizing vaccine, right? But this wasn't. So we knew that. And all you had to do was talk to somebody who knew that. And they say, well, when you put a non-sterilizing vaccine into a pandemic, people are still going to catch it. They're still going to replicate it. They're not going to stop that process. So we're not going to end COVID. Oh, I'm sorry, Cerveza.
Cerveza sickness.
It'll take me a minute. I'll get there. But what we will do is we'll create a lot of variants, because what happens is you have all these circulating antibodies, and then that's just a puzzle room. That's an escape and evasion room for the virus to figure out how do I get around these things? And that's what we saw. As soon as we had these big program of vaccination everywhere, we saw all these variants start to pop out all over the world, right?
How do you, what's your response to people who say, well, listen, Chris, we've had medicine mandates in the past. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, my kid has to get X, Y, and Z medicine to go to school. So why is this any different? Or when you're talking about boosters, you know, you kind of lay out the insanity on social media that it's just not one, now it's two, right. now it's three, now it's four. And I say, well, what's the big deal? I mean, this is just like the flu shot that we've had for such a long time. This is the exact same thing. So if you're not worried about getting the flu shot every year, why on earth should you be worried about these boosters? How do you usually respond to those two arguments?
Well, there's actually multiple arguments buried in there. So here's the first one. Like, hey, you know, my kid has to get X, Y, and Z as a condition of going to school. We've already had such mandates. Now, difference is in those mandate cases, those are actually diseases that kids get.
Right.
It's a big impact on a child's life. Rubella, things like that. Very, very strong. We had all the data, which was really confusing. Children aren't affected by this thing. We now know in Germany, they said how many children have died directly from COVID through the whole pandemic.
60, not with, but
of.
Of, right.
Big difference. Zero.
Right.
Zero. Except for there are some children who have some serious comorbidities, right? Maybe they've got some underlying condition that's really like they're at the edge anyway. Mm-hmm. But healthy children, zero. So we've never mandated ever that children take a vaccine for something against which they have effectively zero risk.
Right.
So again, that's
it goes
a first.
Back to risk reward.
Oh, it's always risk and reward. And by the way, full informed consent. If you go to your doctor and he says, George, I really think you need open heart surgery. Here's the risks. I think you should do it. Your right always includes to say no. I don't want any treatment whatsoever, right? This happens. Cancer patients make this decision all the time, right? And life, quality of life. Do I really want to go take all these poisons and have a really miserable year of life? Or would I rather just have, you know, three or four good months left, right? So these are decisions we always get to make as private individuals is how we want to address our own health. So there's that. The other thing that's never happened before is these still aren't legitimate vaccines in the sense they've gone through a 10-year product development cycle. We have all of this safety data from multiple years in, and we understand a lot about them. We're figuring this out on the fly. They are still emergency use authorized at this point in time because we haven't completed the trials yet. Pfizer's still running trials. So when people sometimes say, Chris, when are you going to get vaccinated? I say, soon as they finish the phase 3 trial. That's February 2024, right? So we don't even have all the data. And so we're collecting the data on the fly, but not really. And that's the final part of the story for me is we're not collecting the data. So for instance, we know that, women have actually pretty serious impacts on their menstrual cycles from this.
Yeah,
we know this.
Yeah.
It's not in any of the safety data. It wasn't even mentioned as an adverse event. If you go in and get a shot, nobody's going to mention it because it's not listed anywhere, but we know through actually going out there into the world that this is a thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's a real signal. There's articles written about it and there's like private groups. Now we know that women try and set up Facebook groups around this that get shut down, but it's a thing. How did we even make it through an entire set of trials without noticing that this is a thing? It tells you just how shoddy this process has been from the start.
So that's something that differentiates it from the typical flu vaccine.
Yeah.
And why is it that, why do we look at the flu vaccine? I'm going to play devil's advocate here. Mm-hmm. Why do we look at the flu vaccine and we say, okay, well, it's reasonably effective. But critics of this medicine would look at it on its fourth booster. It's worthless. Is there an argument there saying, well, it's not that it's worthless. It's just it's not ideal, but it's better than nothing, like the old flu vaccine we had.
Well, this should always be there's always a risk adjusted conversation to be had, right? I do believe that these vaccines, as leaky and non-sterilizing and possibly as risky as they are, they make sense for a certain person of a certain age, especially with certain comorbidities.
Right.
Makes perfect sense. But there's an area where it gets really fuzzy. And then there's an area which is just a no-go, right? Mm. Putting it into a healthy child, I can't. What we're really doing, George, is we're saying to that healthy child, you're going to get no benefit from this, but you're going to lower other people's risk. We've never asked our children to absorb risk so that older, potentially unhealthy people can feel slightly safer.
Yeah. And with the new variant, we might not even, there might not even be that benefit.
Well, the new variant upends the whole story anyway. This Omicron's a narrative busting machine, right? Mm-hmm. It comes in and it's literally actually one of the best things. Like if we had designed one, if you and I had sat down and said, what would we want in a new variant? This would have it because it's highly transmissive, very, very much less illness causing and lethal inducing, right? And what's interesting is the prior versions, if you'd had Delta, Gamma, Beta, all these other versions, their immune system response you've had won't stop you from getting Omicron. but Omicron will stop you from catching those other ones.
Right.
So it's back. It's like a new version. We've got our phone updated. We're on operating system 10.3, and it corrects all the problems of the prior system. It's phenomenal that way. So, and none of the vaccines we currently have do anything except accelerate catching in the transmission of Omicron.
Yeah. So let's unpack that a little bit, because the argument that you always hear from people who favor vaccine mandates mm-hmm. is, well, it's all about the capacity in the healthcare system.
Right.
Right. So even if the Omicron is very mild, it's so transmissible that we could see a huge jump, huge spike in hospitalization because mm-hmm. so many people are getting it at the same time. And therefore, that warrants forcing people to get the vaccine, because theoretically they could have a lower risk of going to the hospital. But I think what you're saying is they really don't have a lower risk. And then I would argue that you've got to get into the nuance as far as the people who are unvaccinated that have had the, call it the cervical sickness in the past, mm-hmm. and what is their probability of going to the hospital? And is it any greater than those who have had the vaccine? And therefore, just to issue a blank mandate, you've got to get into those details in order to do that, if your true objective is health and safety.
True. So to unpack that from the back end, we don't have any data yet as terms of what happened if you'd had alpha, beta, gamma, delta, if you'd had one of those prior variants, mm-hmm. and now you get Omicron. Is it worse or less worse? We don't really know. It seems to be mild for almost everybody, but you're right. Law of large numbers. You infect, 100 million people at once, and 1% of them or 0.5% of them have some, complication. You could swamp your system. We don't really have that problem right now. So we've seen the scary headlines. Hospitals filling up. But if you read them carefully, George, they don't actually say because of.
Right.
Many of them are there with Omicron. They're showing up for other reasons, right? So yes, there are people in the hospital with Omicron, but not because of. And even Fauci went out of his way to make that case recently for children.
Right? Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. So even he's like backpedaling on that narrative. But we don't really have any examples yet of hospital systems being overwhelmed. We do, but not because of COVID. It's because they burnt out the healthcare workers, because they enforced vaccine mandates. A lot of people quit because we treated these people like dirt. We paid them poorly. And, I get emails every day from nurses, doctors, PAs, people in the system. Many of them have come to the conclusion they don't want anything to do with this vaccine because they're treating people who they suspect strongly have been injured by this thing. And they're looking at it going, okay, I see that. And then they're smart people in the healthcare system. So they parse, well, would I want that, which could include embolisms in the lung, aneurysms, clots, strokes, heart attacks, immune system dysregulation, neurological things. There's like a whole host of things that they suspect are from this. And they look at that and they're like, that, or, and they talk to people who've got Omicron, they're like, mostly it's a cold, right? People report the sniffles, headache, feeling malaise. The most I've heard is people being out for maybe 5, 6, 7 days with it, but it's like a cold.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's the, right now, when people say, we have a labor shortage, I don't care if they're talking about truckers or nurses, we don't. A shortage. You pay people, they'll show up. It's not like they went anywhere. We still have them, but they've decided not to work under these conditions for this pay. And I get that.
Yeah. How, I want to layer over something I heard you talk about one of your recent videos about the overall death rate being far higher in 2021 than it is in 2020.
Yes.
And your hypothesis is the way the cervical sickness was handled, it's creating far more health issues than we're actually seeing from the cervical sickness itself, meaning, lockdowns, depression. Alcohol, drug addiction, and whatnot. So could that be playing a role in the hospital capacity right now? And these people are going, so my idea there is more people are going to the hospital, not as a result, but with the cervical sickness, but more people are going to the hospital, really straining the capacity of the system because of what we did, or the government, back in 2020 and into 2021.
Right.
I would go so far as even say making people walk around in a mask, that because we're social creatures, just psychologically, that takes a toll that could impact your immune system. I mean, there's so many knock-on effects. It's just, it's beyond imagination.
Well, this is why it's really puzzling why, you know, the whole mantra, follow the science, Fauci, I am the science, right? And if we had the science, I could tell you right now, I don't have any single paper I can point you to that says mask wearing does anything for
at least the paper, the cloth paper ones.
Zero for those for sure. But yeah. I don't even have ones that say wearing N95 masks does anything, right? So we do have studies that show that the rate of attack, which is how you measure a virus. So you know, how many people, somebody comes in sick, how many people get hit by it is the R naught. And then there's an attack rate under that, which says, how did this play out over time? And so in hospital systems where people were fully vaccinated plus wearing PPE, the attack rate of this thing is indistinguishable from people who live in households without wearing masks. So that's data we have, but it's not ideal. And there's a lot of variables and it's very hard to run a good controlled trial where the mask is the only variable. That's right. The only way you can really parse these things out. So we have some that point to maybe an 11% benefit, but listen, 11, the confidence interval is negative to 11's in the middle and it's positive. It's not the data isn't solid.
Right.
We do have solid data that says if you take children whose brains are developing at light speed, right, and they're learning things like social cues and talking and languages, they're learning very important things for those first years, that blocking facial expression can actually be a thing that really causes developmental harm in children. So, we have that. Plus we have the depression data. Plus we have the suicide data for young people. We have a lot of information that says the collective totality of our responses is not been good. So if you go to your doctor is responsible for your individual health. They may look at your individual case and say, George, vaccine makes perfect sense for you. Here's why. Here's some other things I'd like you to do. Maybe take vitamin D, maybe exercise more, whatever. The public health officials, their job, their only job is all cause mortality. The totality of all of their efforts. Are these leading to a better collective health outcome?
Right.
Not on an individual cases. It drives me nuts when Fauci's like, you have a better chance of not going to the hospital, serious systems, if you get vaccinated. Dude, that's not your job. Your job is based on everything we've been doing.
Yeah.
Do we have more people dying this year or less? 2021 is a complete disaster from what we call is all-cause mortality. So this is motorcycle accidents, suicides, heart attacks, COVID, maybe vaccine injury. You add it all up. How are we doing? We're doing worse this year than last year, but not even Stephen. The all 12 to 44 year categories are doing way worse. They're up like 50-60% higher all cause mortality in those areas, and those aren't people who are impacted by COVID meaningfully all. So we're failing, and that's because we're not following the science.
Yeah.
In this story,
is there a way that's obviously a strong correlation? Is there a way to determine whether there's a causal effect there definitively, or are we just assuming there's a causal effect because the correlation is so strong?
So
you know what I'm saying with the overall deaths.
If the correlation is high enough, you know you've got a signal in there. So this is what the so-called vaccine adverse event reporting system, VAERS, was supposed to be.
Right.
It's not supposed to be definitive. It's not causal. You can't go in there and look at any one record and say, therefore. But it's supposed to be that thing that says there's a pattern here that we need to go look at. Right. And that hasn't been done, to my knowledge. There's been no effort to go in and look at the patterns and say what's actually happening here. There hasn't been any curiosity. It's only this past week that we've seen the CDC come out and go, oh, you know, obesity seems to be a thing. Mm. You know, hey, morbidities that people have seem to be really important. Rochelle Walensky just finally said those words, right? Mm. Just this week. And of course, we've known about this for over 2 years.
Right.
And so the question isn't, you know, could they have done better? The question is, why were they not just bad, like flip a coin, sometimes they got it wrong. How did they get this wrong every step of the way?
Right. But did they get it wrong? I mean, that's the question, because it depends on what your objective is.
All right. So let's go to the data.
If your objective is health and science, yeah, they got it wrong. But
okay.
If your objective
is
control, power, conditioning,
now,
then they
now
hit the nail on the head.
Right. They've done very well. So, I mean, eventually you would say if this had anything to do with, so let's just lay it to bed, this idea that it has anything to do with healthcare. If it did, we would be rummaging around over there in India saying, how is your COVID case and death count so much lower than ours? Rummaging around in Africa going, how are you doing it so much better? We've been in Indonesia. But the data just came out that all-cause mortality across Europe was scored. You know who came out the lowest in all of Europe?
Including Sweden.
Yeah, right. They came out the lowest, not just by a little bit, by a lot. So whatever Sweden was doing is accurate and correct. So anybody listening, if you go to the Sweden's health ministry and you look at their FAQs, and they've had them up for a year, the people they consider safest are those who've already had prior infection. They're the safest category. They say right on their website, if you've had prior infection, you can go visit an elderly person with comorbidities. You're the gold standard. In fact, we would like you for certain jobs. Kids, we can't find any data to suggest that kids either catch or transmit this or in any way harm meaningfully. So they don't even do masking or social distancing, and they've had their schools open the whole time. Imagine how different that would be. I mean, we just learned, they ran the studies and they discovered that people, kids who had been in this so-called remote learning, learned nothing. It's terrible. Not a whole lost year of schooling, social development. There's parents holding kids back because nothing happened developmentally or from a learning standpoint. Sweden wasn't bothered by this at all, and they've been back to life the whole way through. So let's just lay this to rest. They said if we were all interested in public health, we would go over to Sweden and say, what are you doing? Can we model this? But it wasn't just us. Obviously, the rest of Europe could have modeled Sweden. They didn't. So a lot of, let's just be clear, whatever's happening here in Europe, in Canada, Australia, New Zealand, U.S. is not about public health.
Yeah, that's right. So on that note, something you and I feel very strongly about is pushing back against this move towards authoritarianism.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest ways that they're trying to push this authoritarianism is through vaccine mandates. So that I want to talk about that next, because you and I are both going to a march in Washington, D.C., January 23rd. It's going to start at the Washington
Monument,
and it's going to go to the Lincoln Memorial, correct?
Right up the mall.
I really want to encourage, and I mean, you could drive there, fly there, if you're within the vicinity. I mean, there's going to be maybe 40, 50,000 people there. They're going to have speakers, which we can go over, give some of the names. And this is just going to be an incredible event that you don't want to miss. I mean, this is going to be an event that I think you'll remember for the rest of your life. And it's going to be one of those things that, you know, I always tell the story of my father who flew planes in World War II, and he was shot down 3 times. And obviously each one of those times, he just kind of got back up and they put him in a plane and said, okay, you know, you're out tomorrow morning. And he did that obviously because he valued freedom more than he valued safety. And, you know, he passed away in 2005 at the age of 92. And toward the latter stage of his life, he's going to the VA hospital quite a bit, but he always had this hat. I remember it very well. It was a blue kind of corduroy hat, and it had something to do with the Air Force or which, you know, group he flew with. And then he had all of his medals that he would pin to the hat, right? And so he was so proud of the fact that he represented the values that this country was really built on. And he carried that pride with him all the way to his deathbed. And I think if you would have asked him, you know, leading up to when he passed, you know, what are you most proud of on this earth, other than his kids?
Yeah.
I think he would have said standing up for freedom in World War II. So he knew that he was on the right side of history. And so my point here is I think that all of us that go to this march on January 23rd are going to be able to take that with us as a badge of pride for the rest of our lives, that we stood up for freedom and that we were on the right side of history, just like my father was on the right side of history during World War II.
Thanks for that story. And it's absolutely right. It's kind of like that final scene in Braveheart,
you know,
where he said, you will trade all the other days in your life to be back here on this field. If you wanted to just sort of wander away and say, oh, maybe not today. Like, this is it. Like, this is when history gets made.
That's right.
And you either stand up when it counts or you don't. You know, when it's hardest to stand up? When it matters. Right.
Yeah.
But afterwards, you know, this is it. So all these incredible people are coming together, and these are my heroes. Like, so if you say, right at the beginning of this, you know, I mentioned Cervezas brought some good things.
Yeah, right.
And what it's done, it's revealed on the negative side, who are the moral cowards and intellectual frauds? And there's been a lot of them. On the other side, it's revealed who stood up and who took the pain when it mattered most, you know? So these are my heroes in this story are people like Dr. Robert Malone, Pierre Corey, Peter McCullough. These people, they lost jobs. they lost standing. Mm-hmm. They'll probably never be invited back into the inner circle of their moral cowardly, you know, profession.
Right.
But man, these are the giants of our time.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
They're going to be speaking at this event.
Yes, they will.
Among, you might be speaking to Brett Weinstein. Mm-hmm. I might be speaking, and there's the list goes on and on and on. I mean, it's going to be an absolutely amazing march. And when we get done with the march, when we're at Lincoln Memorial.
Yeah.
When we're at the Lincoln Memorial, they're going to have the speakers go up there on the steps, and they're going to have AV, and it's just going to be just, I'm getting chills just thinking about it. So I can't wait to go. And I want to encourage all of you guys, if you can, definitely make the trip out there. But if you can't, at least go to the website, defeatthemandatesdc.com. So if you're planning on joining, I just spoke with the organizers prior to going live, and they would greatly appreciate it if you hit the join us and just RSVP so they can get a good idea as to how many people are going to go. Right now, I believe there's, 33,000 people?
Well, just signed up.
You know, just signed up.
And some of them won't show up, and a lot of people who haven't signed up are going to show up too.
Yeah, so, but this really helps them.
It does.
The license that they have to get from the city, and well, there's a lot of things like that, right?
There's a level of security you have to purchase, and you know, knowing how many actually matters. So if you had, you know, if you thought you were going to have 10,000, you had 100,000, like it's trouble.
That's not good, right? Okay.
And so then, just getting for rough numbers is helpful. And
okay, so if you're going to go, guys, definitely hit the join us RSVP. If you're not going to go, or if you're going to go, there's a way that you can donate. We'll go to this page. That it's actually costing probably a couple $100,000 to put this on. When you calculate the security and the speakers and the AV, it gets very expensive. So if you'd like to, definitely donate. And then if you go to the About Us, this is where you can really see what the core philosophy is here with every single person that's going to participate, at least as speakers. And I would say the majority of people that are going there in attendance. So why are we standing up against the mandates? We can read this right here, Chris. This is absolutely amazing. This is what I'm all about. So no to the mandates, to the vaccine mandates, no to the vaccine passports, no to forcing the cerveza sickness on vaccines on children, mm-hmm. no to coerced vaccination without accepting risk.
That's a big one.
Can you get into that a little bit deeper?
Yeah. So whether you're an employer or you're the government, so the government said, hey, you know what? We think this is so important. We're going to absolve Pfizer and Moderna from any liability if anything happens. By the way, we're absolving ourselves of liability, but we're going to force you, George, to take. And if anything happens, that's on you.
Right.
That's coercion without accepting any risk, which is absolutely abhorrent.
That is. Yeah. No to censorship. There we go. No to limits on reasonable debate. It's amazing that we have to actually stand up for that in 2021 in the United States of America.
Well, from time to time, apparently you have to, I guess.
Yeah. We believe in the power of natural immunity. We insist on informed consent. Can you go into that? I mean, I hear this word or this phrase, informed consent. I kind of know what it means, but I'm not really clear.
So this term, actually, the genesis of it comes out from the Nuremberg trials.
Right.
So a lot of people think Nuremberg trials was like putting Goering on trial. That was a part of it, a big part of it, a huge component of it was that both what the Japanese did and what the Nazis had done prisoners of war and other, you know, undesirables, was they experimented on them medically to find out stuff like how much skin can a person lose before they die, and, you know, how long can they survive in a bucket of ice water, and on. They were horrible experiments. So out of that came this idea of informed consent, which is the medical profession is not allowed to conduct an experiment on any other human without fully informing them about everything we know about the risks and the benefits of that particular action.
Okay, so that makes sense.
It's really
looking at the lens of what's happening.
And by the way, there's nothing in there that said, oh, by the way, you can suspend this for a little while because pandemic, right? And if you look back, even if people say, well, you know, the founding fathers didn't know about pandemics. Like, oh, yeah, they did. George Washington fought a smallpox epidemic.
That's right.
Right? Yeah. So they knew about that, and the founding fathers knew everything there was to know about humans, and they knew about pandemics, and they didn't carve out an exclusion that said, you know, all these rights, which are not privileges, the rights apply unless there's an emergency. They didn't do that.
That's really an insane argument to think that the four founders didn't know about pandemic. When you look throughout history, you know, you go back thousands and thousands of years, that's one of the things that's been a constant. It's just disease, famine, war.
Right.
Disease, famine, war. That's pretty much the history of the world there.
and when you look at even like the 1918, you know, Spanish flu.
Yeah.
They're doing all the stuff we probably should have done, right? You know, have people outdoors and separate them and, you know, put them out in tents. They're like, oh, you know, look at them putting people out in tents. It looked barbaric at the time, but now I understand that was actually.
Don't shut down businesses.
Nope. That was the smartest thing they could have learned from that.
Yeah. And they allowed each local jurisdiction to formulate their own rules. There was no federal decree.
Right. Right. Anyway.
Okay. So let's see. We've got yes to doctors and patients making decisions without interference.
Yep.
It seems very reasonable. I don't know why. Why is this controversial? I don't know. Then they go on to say, we are free and we will not surrender our freedoms out of fear. We are Americans. And we come from every walk of life. We link arms with the vaccinated, unvaccinated, Democrats, Republicans, independents, mothers, fathers, grandparents, college students, teachers, all of these people to stop the mandates and to say never again to a lockdown. I mean, you guys can read the rest here, but this is great stuff. And I think it's something I'm extremely excited to be a part of this. And like I said earlier, I hope all of you guys watching this join us.
Yeah. And I think a fair bit of time went into it. It's important. We did call this defeat the mandates, but really this is an American homecoming.
Yeah, right.
It's an American homecoming because this is about what we really stand for, right?
Yeah.
We're not here to just defeat the mandates. I mean, that's great, but that's a symptom. What's the disease that's going on here? And it's that we've really lost our way in terms of what made us great, what makes us great, you know, and what we can rely on for the future. I got to be honest, George, I'm going to this. I care a lot about the mandates and the vaccines, all that. But again, symptoms. What I really care most about is that the people who really believe that they can take the Constitution and dismantle it because reasons.
Or the Federal Reserve Act.
Or the Federal Reserve Act.
It's the central planners. There's nothing constraining them.
No, the central planners is what I'm really fighting at this stage of my life, because I realize if they win, we go through what I consider to be a very dark period of time.
Right.
And it's going to take us generations to get it back. And so let's not do that if we don't have to.
Because we're on the slippery slope.
We are.
Let's recognize it. Let's acknowledge it and do everything we can to get off.
Exactly. We have to. And so this is, you know, reasonable, informed consent and debate and all of that other stuff. But now we recognize that we're up against something we haven't been up against before. So the censorship word on there, no to censorship. It's even more than that to me, because the way in which we go about censorship, there's easy censorship, which is like, I have a YouTube piece that's struck down, but you and I are engaging in soft censorship right now.
Right. By saying surveillance.
Surveillance, right? We know that, right? And so that impinges, I truly believe that unfettered, unbridled thinking and creativity is what makes things great in life.
Yeah, that's right.
You know?
That's ironically, especially the scientific process,
especially
right?
Especially you read through like Einstein's like memoirs. He didn't say, oh, I sat down for 3 weeks with a team and we got this. He's like, I was taking a shower one day, crazy idea came into my head, and then I had to make the math work, right? So that creative process, it comes in an unbridled state where you have to be free.
People try to poke holes in it
and
using whatever method or whatever data, whatever facts, whatever argument they have. Quick question. Did Einstein ever say that he was the science?
No, he was so humble. He said, if I paraphrase him, he said, I was just a vessel that came through me. I happened to be the guy it came through. And I was smart enough to dance with that idea when it came in and know what to do with it or something.
Right.
But he was very humble. He was not the originator of any of his ideas. They came from some greater source.
Yeah. Right.
That he had access to. But So here's what, you know, I mentioned some of the doctors before. These doctors had resolved by April of 2020 that corticosteroids were the right thing, that hydroxychloroquine worked, that ivermectin had a signal, that now we have probably 30 things on an early treatment panel that we know about from all over the world. Nitazoxanide came out of Brazil, people in India. There's all these great things we know about. To this day, I guarantee you, if you talk to somebody who walks into an urgent care clinic or goes down to the ER and says, I'm not feeling good, they're going to be sent home.
Yeah, I know.
That's it.
Know.
That's the state of care in the U.S. right now. They're going to be sent home, maybe take some aspirin, come back if your lips are blue. That is completely unacceptable.
You're right.
And that's a form of censorship, because I know for a fact that a lot of those doctors and nurses and PAs in those systems, they know better than that.
Oh, yeah.
But they can't, if they say anything, they'll lose their jobs. It's a really bad situation. So we talk about informed consent and censorship. This censorship is really awful. It's constraining good medical care. And the cost of this has been extraordinary.
Yeah. Yeah. And what another thing that really pisses me off is that we talk about these the things that may be effective as far as early treatment. And there are things that the average Joe and Jane in the United States, they just don't have access to. But someone like me, or maybe Kenny McElroy, or something like that, well, we have access because we know all these people and we have, you know, financial resources at our disposal.
Yep.
And then you heard what Aaron Rodgers was saying about the NFL,
right?
You know, that behind the scenes, they're all, you know, the NFL players. Mm-hmm. Stuff. So the people that have the financial resources or the pull are doing whatever they see fit and protecting their families the way they see best. But all the average Joes and Janes, they're not allowed to make that decision. And it's just unbelievable.
It's so bad that there's actually an underground railroad alive and running right now. And this is particularly happening in places like Australia. I get approached all the time. People are like, look, I can't get ivermectin. Mm-hmm. And it's an exceedingly safe drug. The worst that could possibly happen is if somebody overdoses by a factor of 10, nothing, right? You have to go to like 100x overdose. Right? It's really hard. Like if you just go to like a 25x overdose with Tylenol, you're out of luck. Your liver's gone, right?
Yeah, right?
So this stuff is exceedingly safe. So there's really no public health reason to say, well, you can't get this, but they've come down on it. United States Custom and Postal Service is now intercepting shipments of people trying to get this from India here in this country. You can't get it at all in Canada. So there's been this medical knowledge and authoritarianism to say, we're not even going to let you decide. We're deciding that you can't have this stuff. But, you know, these are the same people. Like when this drives me nuts. So these pharmacists, for the first time ever, have decided to get in between even doctors and patients who've decided that they're going to get ivermectin prescription and say, oh, well, we won't fill that out of conscience. I'm like, really? How many OxyContin prescriptions did you out of conscience not fill this past 5 years while 100,000 Americans were dying from that? Right. Like it's bizarre. And so that idea that we have to now have this thing where people are taking animal grade stuff because that's all they can get their hands on, right? That's not because people want to take horse, you know, design medicine or cow design medicine. It's because they can't get anything else,
right?
And so that's just a really unacceptable state of condition. So when the media says, oh, Joe Rogan took horse dewormer, false. He took human grade stuff. And the reason that they're saying it's horse dewormer in the first place is because they're conflicted and pharma told them to say that. It's not because it's the right thing to say or it's reasonable.
Yeah, they're being extorted too. But from the standpoint of, if you do this, we could take away your license. Then they have to worry about their livelihood, providing for their kids, their wife, their husband, etc.
Yeah. So we got to get away from all that. And that's really what this march is about that we've been talking about, is to just stand up and start getting counted. By the way, this is just us in this country, in the United States, going, you know, maybe we should start doing what people all over the world have been doing. You know, this is just join the party.
Yeah.
Right. Germans have been marching like crazy. People in Melbourne, Australia have been marching like crazy and just getting their voices out there and heard. So it's time.
And
it's just
great
time.
Too, because the United States, as far as they are for better or for worse, they're a country that all of the countries, at least the citizens, look to. It's kind of, you know, well, if they're doing it, then maybe, you know, we should do it, whether it's fashion, music, the arts, or hopefully this.
Yeah, so. No, it's time.
Let's I know we're short on time here, Chris, so let's there we go. We got that. So let's take a couple callers here. So I'm sure we've got some questions for you. Hi, sir. What is your name?
Hi, my name's PJ. Nice to talk, George.
Oh, thank you very much. So, PJ, what's your question for Chris Martinson?
Okay, George, my question for Chris Martinson is, how can I avoid getting the booster shot while I already took two doses and submitted that proof for college?
Yeah, this is really tricky, PJ. Sorry for the situation you're in.
Yeah,
one of the things that people are starting to do, there is a place called the Unity Project, and they're starting to put forms up there. And I work with Robert Barnes, and we're developing strategies. But in the absence of having a good, competent legal strategy, the first thing is we talked about this idea of having having to take risk, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to take the risk. So you fill out a piece of paper, even if you just scratch it out, and you say, I'm putting the college on notice, and I'm doing this. I'm being coerced. I feel like this is a matter of religious. My religious exemption is being denied. And I'm putting you on notice that if anything bad happens, I do not hereby consent to giving away my liability in this. I'm not assuming liability. So just put the college on notice, you know?
Yep.
And I think if enough people do that and say, you have to understand that this is your liability, not mine, because you're making it a condition of me being able to attend this thing that I have hundreds of thousands of dollars invested in when you add up all your time and money, right? So that would be just put them on notice. Step one.
Yeah. And just to be clear, we talked to Barnes quite a bit. Chris and Robert were just speakers at my last mastermind group.
So that's where I met him. I was just so impressed.
Yeah. But the reason Chris was talking about a religious exemption, because Barnes was saying from a legal standpoint, and this is neither of us are lawyers, obviously, but you want to check with Barnes, maybe go to his website, because he was saying that even if you're not a religious person, this could fall under that category. You need to go to his website and check it out. Or do you know?
Because Title VII is religious exemption, and it's been broadly defined to be a matter of conscience. Agnostic people still have Title VII applies to them as equally as anybody else. So you could say it's unconscionable to me that you would be forcing young, healthy people who bear zero risk from this thing, from the Cerveza, to undergo this experimental medical treatment and require me to assume all the risk in that thing. That's unconscionable. So you're filing it as a matter of conscience.
Okay.
Two, I would delay it as long as possible. Omicron is breaking the entire narrative down. Mm-hmm. If you can delay it, just drag it out to the bitter end. See if you can get an extension, because my guess is if you just drag your feet long enough, this all is going away.
Yeah. I've definitely been trying to drag it a bit, and now I'm going online for until the 30th. I'm not sure if they're going to push that. So I'm trying to see if push the booster with that. But yeah, I was definitely interested in learning how I could possibly get around that.
Yeah. Here's the first thing I do as a delay. I would say I need to see the exact policy, because many colleges and universities are requiring this, but they don't actually have a policy. They're just stating it.
Mm-hmm.
And say, no, I need to see the policy, and I need to see it in writing. I need to review it. Right. And if in their policy, they're missing any part of informed consent, say, I'm sorry, I don't understand what risks you're asking me to assume here. But many of them actually won't have the policy. And so you can actually trip them up just on that basis alone.
All right. So definitely look out for that too.
Yeah. Caller. Right. Thank you very much. Good for
luck
the question.
With
that.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you guys. Yep.
All right. Josh, we take another one, buddy. All right. Hello, sir. What is your name?
Hey, my name's Justin Horn. How are you guys doing?
Doing good, well, good. Justin. What's your question for Dr. Chris Martinson?
All right. So the first thing I wanted to say is I found you, Chris, in January 2020, and you were the reason that we made it through COVID, me and my family, as well as we did. So thank you very, very much. And then through you, I found George, and my financial situation has improved by about 40% because of it. So thank you both.
Great,
man. For that information. And so the reason I'm calling today is I got an 8-month-old daughter who she's just constantly sick. So we couldn't get into our daycare until she was about 5 months old. First week of getting back to daycare, she got RSV, took her out of daycare, and then she got 3 different ear infections. We had tubes put in her ears. She was healthy for about 2 days. My son came down with influenza A. She got influenza A. That was a week ago. She's over that. She was over that for 2 days. And this morning she woke up crying a bunch. And she's like a normally extremely happy little girl that never ever complains with any crying. So we took her to the doctor today again, and the doctors here are saying that these kids that are just newborns are really, really struggling to get over any diseases. Our doctor said they sent a 2-month-old or 3-month-old up to a center that had more care, and they tested her for viruses, and she had 6 viruses at the same time. So I was wondering, through all, you know, all of your medical expertise, all the communication you've been getting, Chris, have you been seeing stuff like this? And do you have any hypotheses as to what could potentially be causing all these children, like my daughter, to be struggling with their health?
Is your wife vaccinated?
She is not. She got COVID while she was pregnant with my daughter. And yeah. So my hypothesis is she got COVID, and then while my daughter was in the womb, she got her immune system development kind of wrecked, and she's getting over things, which is a good sign. But it seems like her ability to fight off the original inoculum of a virus is non-existent.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So the first thing I would, I'm going to ask you to go look into the work of a woman named Sabine Hazan. She does the whole gut biome thing. Her work is astonishing, and she's showing super high correlations between people's health of their gut biome, and they do full genetic sequencing. It's very highly complicated, amazing work. And what she's shown is that people who have functioning gut biomes have a much, much better run with not just COVID, but all sorts of different things. So I would actually, you know, a newborn, getting that whole equilibrium, getting your whole body tuned up, getting your gut biome established, getting, you know, your immune system on board, because it has a lot of work to do in life, is tricky business. So if it gets dysregulated, one of the first key things you can do to get it back on regulation is get the gut biome back balanced. She's got a whole program around how to do that. But it might be as simple as that. Astonishingly,
Even for kids that age?
I'd have to look into that. I'm not totally positive, okay. But I believe so. Because the first thing you do as a newborn is you get colostrum, which is mom's, you know, antibodies and all sorts of things to that first milk. You have to get your gut biome online as fast as possible, right? Okay. So that's absolutely, that could be a helpful thing. I don't know, but that's a tough situation. We know that RSV has really been sweeping through childhood populations in a not good way this past year. So if I was in your shoes, I would be looking into the work of people who can help get the body as tuned up as possible.
Okay.
Best of luck with that.
Like I said before, you guys, my personal heroes for this time in this world. So thank you for everything you're doing.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you for the kind words, Justin. It's sincerely appreciated.
Yes. Thank you.
Hello, sir. What is your name?
Dave Seeley. Thank you for the pleasure of talking to both of you. The live chat's been awesome. My question, just to fire it off real quick, if you're doing your thing in Washington, D.C., that's fantastic. Is there any chance you guys could do that at a state level as well? I think we could maybe really, you know, put a line in the sand, because they've walked over so many rights, liberties, and privileges that we have in this country and use this as an excuse that I can't deal with it. I mean, this is just over the top, and I'm mad as hell, and I don't want to take it anymore.
Dave, thank you for that. So there's a big push to have as many people show up in DC as possible. Wink, wink to my tribe. I'm saying, listen, I know everybody can't do that. So I think that same day, January 23rd, people ought to show up at their state capitals, their town halls, whatever. Dave, if you can make it, I mean, just even if it's just one guy, if you're out there, you know, do it. But I think that's what we should offer, because not everybody can travel. I get that. And it's that time of year. But yeah, this doesn't have to be confined to DC as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. And for me, I see it as potentially just starting a movement. And I do a lot of public speaking. And obviously, I was just at my event, Rebel Capitalist Live. But one of the things that I truly believe is that people who really value freedom, liberty, and free market capitalism, we are a silent majority. Mm-hmm. We're not a minority. And it's just this vocal minority that's out there that's just pushing back that makes things seem overwhelming. But assuming that I am correct, we are a silent majority, I think that this movement, this march in Washington, January 23rd, can be just the start of something that we can see, okay, wow, there's 50,000 people, 75,000 people that showed up. Everyone gets energized and they take that back to their local community and they plan a similar event maybe in February or something like that. I think this is just a start of a movement, but I would strongly suggest doing what Chris was saying, you know, just try to organize something locally for the 23rd. But then beyond that, I think we just use this push as momentum to do things at a local level.
Yep. And this is really critical because one of the things I also picked up from Robert Barnes at your event was he talked about how important the court of public opinion is, because there's all these court cases going on right now and judges are, I honestly, I'm not going to this because I think, you know, some congressman will see it and wake up. I don't have any hope for that myself.
Yeah.
This is about you and I finding each other, about other people seeing that we exist. It's about other people being emboldened by this idea. It's a movement.
Yep.
And it's getting the court of public opinion to sway, because what we need to do is move stuff out of what's called private knowledge to common knowledge. It has to be okay for people to say in a public place, you know, I think my aunt was vaccine injured, and they should be able to say that and talk about that, even if it's not true or whatever, but they should have that right. So I think it's really important that we just show up. That's the value of it for me.
Yeah.
Totally. It's not just important, gentlemen. It's critical. I think we're hitting that point of critical mass, and we just, what did every patriot in this country, living or dead, fight for?
That's right.
Really, there's history right there.
Yep.
You know, your dad, you know, thank you for his service. And, you know, my dad did the same thing in Korea. And it's just, I'm sorry, guys. I you might want to cut me off because I get choked up about it, but what the hell is it for? You know, I'm sorry, but daggone it. They put everything on the line for us to just hand it away. Just, oh, it's free. Take it away. No, that's not what this is all about, gentlemen. Never has been.
That's right.
That's right.
Okay.
We are the last bastion and the last stand for freedom. We have to do it. There's nowhere to run, guys.
Yeah. And I think the majority of Americans, either on the right or left, they agree with you, and we're waking them up. So,
well, it's not left or right, guys. It's right or wrong. That's all there is to it, for the love of Pete.
Yeah, that's right.
But I do thank you for your time. I really do. You guys are awesome. Keep up the awesome work, and I love you.
Thank you very much.
Love you back, Dave. Thank you. Appreciate it. We're all in this together.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, guys. We'll leave it there. Chris, thanks a lot for coming in.
Hey, my pleasure. Joining me. My pleasure.
That was really awesome. And one more time for the viewers, you've got to go to the website. What was it, Chris?
DefeatTheMandateDC.com.
Yep. Go there. Sign up. RSVP if you're going to go. If not, consider donating. But then definitely look at the About Us page to get the principles that they're standing behind. And I think it's something that all of us can stand behind, whether we go to DC or just really try to open up the people around us in our, or open up their eyes in our local community.
For sure. Fantastic. All right. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thanks, buddy.
All right. Bye, everyone.